Okay, tonight I want to speak about some of the requirements for the Malkos of the Bensar Remora, some of the requirements that are mentioned by the Gemara and the Rishonim. This is, again, going to directly relate to some of the things that we discussed last week. Just as a reminder, last week we were discussing the question of whether or not there's any substantive link between the Malkos of the Bensar Remora and the Misa of the Bensar Remora, whether it's one continued process, or whether it's just two separate and distinct phases. We saw a couple of Machlokos Achronim highlighting those issues, discussion of the Rambam and the Ramban, whether they should be one mitzvah, two mitzvahs, and the like. So some of the questions that we see tonight are going to relate back to that conceptual question, but let's start by analyzing some of the, again, strict requirements for the Malkos. Now, we're going to start with one that is perhaps the most famous because there's a Rav Chaim on it that we'll see. I gave you an excerpt of the Rav Chaim. If you want to see that Rav Chaim in full, it's in source. It's in, a piece of the Rav Chaim is in source 5 on the Marim HaKomos. If you want to see it in full, it is the last, actually the last Rav Chaim in Sefer. It's the very last one in Hilchos Ma'amrim. He has a piece here where the analysis that he conducts is a bit more extensive than what we're going to see tonight, but it was made famous by Rav Chaim. But it also opens a door to other issues as well, which we're going to see tonight, and perhaps some of which we're going to see next week as well. So let's take a look, beginning with source number one, with what I'm calling Bedika. And you'll see what I mean by Bedika in a moment. The Gemara on Sanhedrin, Daf Samot Tesamon Aleph, says, Gufa Amar of Chris Pedal Yomar of Shabsai, Kol Yomav Shal Ben Tzor Rumora, Eino Ela Shlosha Chadoshim Bilvat. The whole window in which one can potentially be rendered a Ben Tzor Rumora, the entirety of the window is 3 months, and that's it. The Anan Tanan, the Gemara asked, and we learn in the Mishnah, Mishiyavi Shtei Sa'aros V'ad Sheyakif Zakan HaTachton. Didn't we learn that it's that there are certain physical markers that dictate the boundaries from when he can be a Ben Tzor Remora? Hikiv Zakan Afagav Delo Maluch Shalosh HaChadoshim, Maluch Shalosh HaChadoshim Afagav Delo Hikiv. So the Gemara says that if you have either of these, either if he hits certain physical markers, or if it's 3 months after he becomes a bar mitzvah, he can no longer become a ben sorer umore. The Gemara on Daf Samech Hasamud Beis gives us a drasha that serves as the source of this. If we noted at the beginning, if you look at source number two, it starts with Katam Minalon de Pater, and that was a Gemara that we analyzed a month and a half ago or 2 months ago when we began, when we were talking about that first shir and the whole Havamina that Katan should be punished. But the Gemara ultimately introduces Xeris HaKazav. If you look at the underline, V'od ben velo ish Katan mashma. The Gemara says, maybe I would have thought that a Katan is Chayav because it calls him a ben sorer umore and not an ish sorer umore. Amr v'hud amarav de amar krav v'chiyel ish ben hasamach ligburaso shel ish. So we're dealing with a young man who is close to the full strength of manhood, but is not quite there yet. And if you look through the Gemara, in the continuation, the Gemara again gives particular signs of the physical maturation. We're not going to go through the particular anatomical details for the sake of Lashon Nekiyah, which the Gemara says the Mishnah subscribes to as well, when it uses, again, metaphors for Zakana Tachton and the like. But after all, we all are doctors here. So if you want to go through all of the...
tenor staging.
The, I don't know what that means, but I'm sure it's accurate. But the Gemara does give us some physical markers to mark his stages of physical maturation, and the Gemara says that if you hit either one of those, then he is no longer going to be a Ben Tzor Remora. So again, if he hits a certain stage, if he hits a certain stage of physical maturity, or if he hits 3 months after his bar mitzvah, either of those would render him or would exclude him from eligibility for Ben Tzor Remora. Fine. That is the background. Then we come to the Rambam. The Rambam says in Mamrim Perek Zayin, which is, again, we've been analyzing the entire time until now, the Rambam in Mamrim Perek Zayin is where he discusses Ben Tzor Remora. In Halacha Zayin, he
explains where 3 months came from. Like
3 months. So the Gemara explains it's 3 months because after 3 months, we would have been able to prove that he has reached his godless, because after 3 months, if he impregnated a woman, it would have been nikar that she is meuberas. So in other words, until 3 months, we can't know whether or not he's at that stage. After 3 months, we can recognize that he's at that stage because of the heker ibur that occurs after 3 months. That's the explanation for the Gemara. So the Gemara, the Rambam in Mamrim Perak Zayin Halacha Zayin says the following. He describes the whole process of Bentzor Umorah, and he says, Keitz Adonin Bentzor Umorah, how do we have go through this whole process of Bentzor Umorah? Mivien Oso Ave V'imo Tchilo LeBeistin Shal Shlosha. His parents will bring him to a basin of three people. V'omrim Lahen, B'neinu Zeh Soreh Umorah. As the pasuk describes, they declare, this is a wayward, rebellious son. Mivien Shnei Edim Shaganav Mishal Ave V'kana Basar V'yayin B'ma Shaganav. V'achal Oso Achila Ha'amura Achar Ha'asra. These are going to be lines that we come back to, but and then you bring two witnesses. The witnesses declare that this young man has stolen from his parents, and he bought meat and wine, and he ate them with all of the conditions that we've described. He was warned, akar ha-hasra, with all the conditions that we've described for events or remora. Bezuhi edos harishona, umalkan oso kishar chiyuve malkos. And this is the first testimony. And as we saw last week, again, the first one does not have a punishment of skila, but this is the first one, and he receives malchus, just like other chiyuve malchus. Again, we'll come back to all these lashonos, and we will assess them in greater detail in a moment. Shnemar v'yisru osov lo yishma alehem, as the pasuk says, v'yisru osov lo yishma alehem, they tell him off, they give him asra'a, they give him malchus, as Jerry was arguing last week, and he does not listen. Now, second stage. Chazar v'ganav mishal aviv v'achal achila zo. Let's say he repeats the behavior. He goes back and does the same thing again. Aviv v'imam v'inus al basin shal shlosha v'esrim. This time they bring him to a basin not of three dayanim, not of three judges, which you need for malchus, but rather 23 judges, which is necessary for any case in which we are assessing a capital crime. V'in shnei edim. And you bring two witnesses. Once again, they testify that he did this this achila. He ate and drank in the fashion described, everything that we've been discussing until now, and as the Rambam describes earlier in Mamrim Perek Zayin, after they had warned him. And this is the second testimony, or the last testimony. Even if it's the same two witnesses. Now here's the key line. The achar shemekablen edusam, after they accept the testimony, they do a physical examination to determine whether or not he reached the stage of physical maturity that would disqualify him from Bentzor Umorah eligibility. If he didn't reach that stage of physical maturity, and he hasn't hit the 3 months after his bar mitzvah, then Gomrin Dino Gedera Kol Haruge Beisim Besok L'Nosam. Then they will complete the Gemar Din, they will paskin, and they will deliver Skila, they will deliver the capital punishment, just like other instances of capital punishment. And we have a halacha, once again, something that perhaps we'll revisit, that the three original judges need to be there for the Gemar Din of the capital punishment as well, which might be another indication, like we were saying, of a continuum, that the first stage of Malkus is contributing to the Misa as well, therefore they need to be present for both. But at the very least, we have this Psak of the Rambam, that in order to deliver this capital punishment, you need to do the physical examination first to determine whether or not he is still within that brief window of eligibility for Bentzor Umorah. And the Kesef Mishnah asks a very basic question on this Rambam. Kesef Mishnah asks as follows: Tzarech iyun b'mashlo hitzrich livdoch im hikif zakan, ela be'eis sherotzim ligmor dino l'misa. Lama lo hitzrich l'bodo kodim shayil kuhu? The Kesef Mishnah asks, why is it the case the Rambam mentions this requirement that you need to do this physical examination when, specifically before that second stage, if you want to deliver capital punishment, before you do so, you need to do the physical examination to determine that he hasn't passed that narrow window when he's still eligible to become a Bentzor Umorah. But the Rambam never says that you do that bedika in the first stage. The Kesef Mishnah says, before the corporal punishment as well, we should do the same exact physical examination to determine whether or not he's actually within the category of Bentzor Umorah. Yet the Rambam never mentions that. It seems as if when it comes to the first time around, when you're just delivering the corporal punishment, there's no physical examination that's done. Basin goes right ahead and delivers the corporal punishment. Because if he is a gadol, because he can never be made a Bentzor Umorah, how is he a bar malchus? How can we render him liable for the corporal punishment if he can't be made a Bentzor Umorah? Now, the particular formulation of the Kesef Mishnah is something that we're going to come back to, but the question of the Kesef Mishnah is a very basic one. Why in the world are we only deeming this this physical examination necessary for the second stage for the capital punishment, why not for the corporal punishment for the Malchus as well? That is the question of the Kesef Mishnah. Yes? Yeah? You have thoughts?
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I have thought about what might be.
Okay. So Rav Chaim, you want...
No, hold on.
Okay. It's always your call. But Rav Chaim weighs in on this, and he makes what I think is a very compelling suggestion. He himself actually modifies the suggestion later in the piece. But he argues that there is a very basic difference between Malchus of the Ben Tzora Umorah and the Misa of the Ben Tzora Umorah. He quotes the question of the Kesef Mishnah, and then he says as follows. In accordance with this question, and according to some analysis that he offers earlier in the piece, he says, this is what we're going to have to say to explain the Rambam. This is source number 5. Got it? Okay. Techaluk din Malchus midin Misa b'hach de'eshtanu dino. He argues that there's a fundamental difference between Malchus and Misa, between the corporal punishment and the capital punishment, as far as this halacha of Ishtani Dino means that once he's passed that narrow window of eligibility, he's no longer liable to the punishment. He's saying that that doesn't apply equally to Malchus and to Misa. All of these halachos that we've been discussing in the context of Ben Tzora Umorah, all these gzeros hakasav that we saw, that came out of the psukim in Parshas Ki Tseitse, all of that, shelo yehei ish, v'lo av, v'od harbe pratim, v'chaser echad mehem, eno nasa Ben Tzora Umorah, all of these again, all of these things that we use the psukim to teach us, all of these requirements that are necessary in order to fit, all those boxes that we need to check off in order to make him into a Ben Tzora Umorah, ikaran le'inyin chiyav misa hu dinam. All of them were said specifically regarding what? Specifically regarding the capital punishment, not regarding that first instance where we punish him and we only give him Malchus. De'ikar chiyuva hu midin ben tzora umorah. Because when it comes to that punishment of that, when it comes to that capital punishment, that punishment of skilo, that is a function of what Rav Chaim is calling the din ben tzora umorah. That is a function of the status of ben tzora umorah. There's this unique halachic status. It's called ben tzora umorah, the wayward son. And what does that pertain to? That in order to achieve that halachic status, you need to check off all of those boxes that the Gemara stipulated based on all of the drushos from the psukim. But that is all only regarding the punishment of skil, regarding the capital punishment. Betalya b'shem ben tzora umorah. Obviously, Chaim is using heavily brisker language here, but there it's contingent on the chalos shem, the halachic status of ben tzora umorah. The Allah kaimi kol hanochdinim. And it's regarding that shame ben tzora umorah, regarding that halachic status of ben tzora umorah, that all of these stipulations and conditions were mentioned. Di lav hachi les bei shame ben tzora umorah, because if you lack any of those, one of those stipulations or conditions, you no longer have this shame, this halachic status of ben tzora umorah. Aval, however, if Chaim says, chiyuv hamalkos, when it comes to the corporal punishment, yesh lomer de ein zek klal midin ben tzora umorah. That's not about ben tzora umorah at all. Why does he receive Malchus? Not because of any special status, any special halachic legal category of ben tzora umorah. It's simply because he violated an Isur de'oraisa of lo soklu al adam. And when you violate an Isur de'oraisa, and it's a lav sheyesh ba maisa, you receive Malchus. It's like any other lav in the Torah. It's like any other Isur losa asay where you receive Malchus. But it's not contingent on that status of Mensor Umora, and therefore none of these halachos apply. Chaim is suggesting a very fundamental difference between Malchus and Misa when it comes to Ben Tzora Umorah. Again, hearkening back to the discussion that we had last week regarding the unique relation, or regarding the potentially unique relationship between those two, whether we view them as linked or distinct. Rav Chaim is saying that they should, at least at the outset he's saying, they should be viewed as entirely distinct. When it comes to Malchus, that is a punishment like all other punishments we have in the Torah. You violate an Isur Losa Asay, you receive an Onesh of Malchus, and that's how we should perceive the first violation of the Ben Tzora Umorah as well. He violated an Isur Losaseh of Losoklu Al Adam, and as a result, the natural punishment is Malchus. That has nothing to do with this unique halachic status of Ben Tzora Umorah. This unique halachic status of Ben Tzora Umorah, that is only in order to justify the punishment of Skila the second time around, when we give him capital punishment. And that unique status of Ben Tzora Umorah has all sorts of requirements, all of the stipulations that were listed in the Gemara. But you don't need any of those stipulations, Rav Chaim argues, in order to just give him Malchus.
So part of this din of Bensarmura then has to be that you were also previously convicted and punished for a, not unrelated, but I mean unrelated in the sense of not being part of this din, unrelated Isser.
In other words, I wouldn't say it's necessarily unrelated. We can formulate it the same way that we saw the Orsa Meach formulating it last week, which is that part of the stature of Ben Soru Mora is that even after being punished for this Avera, he still persisted in the Avera. You could have a one-directional relationship, is effectively what you're describing. Yeah. You could say that part of the shame Ben Soru Mora is the fact that he was so entrenched in the Isser, that he was so persistent in performance of the Isser, that even after he had been punished once for doing it, he still did it again. But that still doesn't tell me that the first time around, it's contingent on that shame Ben Soru Mora.
Yeah.
According to your plan, then, if let's say you just stole anything, forget about Pasur Miriam, and then he did this, you'd be chayav, because there are two to do that. The idea is
that wouldn't be losok lo aladam. You don't have Malchus for Gneva. Gneva is a lav shenita klase because of heishav asagez al shagaza.
You're saying losok lo aladam specifically on...
is on the eating, again, is on the eating bezol of a sove, right? But Ra'av Sanos, as the Rambam said.
Why does the Aviv Imo have to be the one to bring him in?
Why do Aviv Imo need to be the ones to bring him in for the first one, according to Rav Chaim? At least according to this stage in Rav Chaim's approach.
Perhaps they don't.
It doesn't in the Rambam, they do.
No, the Rambam, so we're going to talk about Aviv Imo the first time around. That's, if you look at section number 2, it indeed says Aviv Imo. But you are correct, Ariel, that for the Rambam, it does seem like Aviv Imo need to bring him into Beis Din the first time. Which
you could say that, like, Lo Tuchel Adam that's being violated here is the Ben Soru Mora, just not the same Ben Soru. I mean, it's some different.
It's hard.
It has to apply. It can't be that, you know, it can't be that if I go out and steal some money and eat meat and wine, drink wine, you know, on someone else's property, that I get Malchus for Lo Tuchel Adam.
Right.
It has to be that I am also 13 and...
Right, 100%. I mean, look, it's... there are different ways you can go about saying this. I mean, one more surprising way. We will see what seems to be Machlokas as to whether or not the father and mother need to bring him in for the set of Malchus. Again, that's issue number 2 on our Mara Makomos tonight. The simple implication of the Rambam would be, again, if you just look at Halacha Zayin, that they do bring him in. Now, you could have claimed that it may be Aviv Imo isn't strictly necessary for the Malchus, but when the Rambam says Ketz Adonim Mitzor Mora, he's referring to the entire process, and that does require Aviv Imo. That's one thing that you can claim.
Or it's a Hechitim Mitzor for at least the first part.
And it's necessary for the second part, something like that. If you're going to live Davka the Aviv Imo, if you're going to say it is Davka, and you probably have to say something like what Jerry was saying before. Either that... Right, again, my question would be, if the Rambam was strictly talking about the Malchus in and of itself, would that be necessary? Or is the Rambam... the Rambam is talking about the entire process of Ben Soru Mora, right? He's going through the entire thing. So that could be necessary for the whole process that ultimately ends up with Skila. Again, I agree with you. I don't think that would be the simple reading of the Rambam. I think what you'd alternatively say is something similar to what Jerry was saying before, which is that either, and I think there are different ways you could formulate it, either that a shear in Lo Soklo Al Adam is that he's willing to steal from his parents in order to do it. It's like a shear in the Ra'av Sanos. It's a shear in his overwhelming desire to engage in the kind of behavior. Or that there are certain formal requirements, even for the Lo Soklo Al Adam, that the Rambam is describing.
If you said the first thing, still one of the parents have to bring it in, that would just explain why he'd have to be stealing from the parents.
Correct. You're right. Then that would not explain why the parents need to bring him in.
I also think there's some degree of lav dafka-ness of the Rambam in that he says, as you just pointed out, so in the psukim, if you were going to read the psukim the way that Chazal read it, then that part should not be required for... because the psukim are in order, you know, Yelush Ben Zerumara, and Inishma, right? Nothing about Omrim, B'nai Zerumara, and then Vizruoto, they give him office, and then later, he doesn't list, Vloishma Alehem, and then, Vitafsim Vavim, etc., etc., and then Vamburul Zikneiram B'nai Zerumara. So, not sure that the Rambam meant that Dafka, like, they had to say B'nai Zerumara, he's just kind of.
I think your point is very well taken for this argument of Rav Chaim. It happens to be that Rav Chaim himself concludes that even for the Rambam, the Malkus is unique in Ben Tzor Umura, not for the reason that you mentioned, actually, for other reasons. He doesn't bring this point up. I think it's a good point. Again, either you'd say it's Lav Davka. We'll see. It's not so obvious that, and this actually relates exactly to some of the points that you're raising, Jerry, in terms of the Seder HaPsukim, but Tav Suva Aviv V'Imo also seems to be referring to the Misa, which is something that we'll see in a moment. But you certainly, in theory, can argue that the Malkus is an independent thing. Outside of the Rambam, you can certainly argue that, especially for those who don't think that the parents need to bring him in for the Malkus. Rav Chaim doesn't seem to be bothered so much by this point. Maybe he would say it's Lav Davka for the first one, maybe he's saying it's for the whole process, or something to that effect. Now, before we go any further in Rav Chaim, I'll just point out, there do seem to be a number of diukim that Rav Chaim does not explicate, but I think work very well to support Rav Chaim's interpretation of the Rambam. If you look back at source number 3, at the Rambam in Mamrim Perek Zayin, Halacha Hey, the Rambam says, Lo anash hakasav katan shlo balach lal mitzvos. The Torah here does not include a katan, because a katan is not punished. We know the katan is not yet within the obligation of Taryag Mitzvos. That's just quoting the Gemara on the Samech Chesem Beis that we've seen and analyzed. V'chein isha gadov arehu b'shus atzmo eino niskal m'mnei shagana v'achal v'shasa achilazo ha-mecho'eres. The Rambam is meduyak here. He says once he reaches the age where he's on his own, again, that age that we were describing in the Gemara, once he reaches the full gvuraso shel ish, he no longer receives skila if he steals and eats and drinks. He doesn't say that he's not within Ben Tzor Umura at all. He doesn't say that he doesn't receive Malkus. The Rambam says, Eino niska. Ha-keitzan mi piyashmua lamdu she'ein din ze'e ela b'ben shloshes reishana v'yom echad she'hevi shtei saros at she'yakev kol agid v'echad she'yakev aseir kol agid ha'reyu b'shus atmo ve'eino niska. Once again, the Rambam gives the whole anatomical description, and he says that once he reaches that stage of physical maturity, eino niska. He says he doesn't receive skila. So if you take Rav Chaim's interpretation, it's rather meduyak. The Rambam says that there's no skila at that stage, not that there's no punishment whatsoever at that stage. It's specifically referring to the second punishment, the capital punishment, and therefore, and the Rambam describes the Bedikah in Halacha Zayin appropriately. He says that the Bedikah is only going to be on that second stage. You don't need a Bedikah for the Malkus. Just another quick tiyuk. Jerry, you want to jump in on that one?
So that would mean like a 16-year-old can get Malkus for stealing.
We may not begin the Parsha of Ben Tzor Umura if he's already 16. But let's say he were... If you wanted to take it to its fullest extreme, you'd say, yes, Eino Chinam. And that's a distinct possibility. The alternative would be to say that we're talking specifically about Ishtani Dino now. In other words, when they brought him in...
He was 13, and then they never got
exactly,
him.
Exactly. Even though they find out that definitively now he's 16, before they render the Psak Din, they'll still render the Psak Din. Before they get things... They're not going to get things started unless there's potential for Ben Tzor Umura. And again, this perhaps goes directly back to the point that we were addressing a moment ago, in Ariel's point, that again, when the Rambam says the parents bring him in, they might bring him in because there's this potential for the entire process of Ben Tzor Umura. This is going to be a point that we relate back to in really just a moment. But at the very least, even if he reached that point of physical maturity, we wouldn't withhold the Gemar Din simply because of that. We wouldn't say Ishtani Dino the way we would by Skila. Now, just one other diuk that I think supports Rav Chaim's argument. We just read Halacha Zayin. If you look at the first underline in Halacha Zayin, he says, Umalkin oso kishar chiyuve malkus, chayave malkus. He says that this is a chiyuv malkus like all others. Now, again, you can just say this as a description of what the Beis Din is doing, that they're giving him malkus following the same procedure that they always give, a maximum of 39. They do a health assessment to determine whether or not he can actually take 39 or how many can he take, and they follow that basic procedure. But if you want to read into the line, you'll say, Malkinos Akshar Chiyuve Malkus means that this is a real Chiyuve Malkus like all others. Now, within Rav Chaim's argument here, I just want to point out that there are two points that Rav Chaim is essentially making, one of which is stronger than the other. And as we'll see in a moment, Rav Chaim kind of backtracks on one of them. Let's say for a moment, so Rav Chaim is trying to explain why, and this is a subtle point, but I think it's an important one. The Rambam is trying to explain why the Rambam requires bedika on skila, on the capital punishment, but does not require bedika, again, checking for the signs of that physical maturation, for the malchus, for the corporal punishment. Now, you could have given two reasons why bedika would have been necessary for the malchus itself. Two possible reasons why bedika would be necessary for malchus. One option is to say, and this is what I'll call the stronger argument, one option is to say that when the Torah lists all of these requirements of Ben Sarah Umora, they don't apply only to Misa. They apply equally to Malchus. Malchus is part of the Ben Sarah Umora also. So all of these qualifications that we listed, regarding his age, regarding his physical maturation, regarding all of the different things that he needs to eat, and all of the, again, nuanced categories and stipulations regarding how exactly he needs to eat it. All of that doesn't just apply to Misa, it applies to Malchus. Those are both equal parts of the Ben Sarah Umora process, and all the stipulations apply equally to both. That's one option. Another thing that I could have said is that these things aren't actually necessary for the Malchus itself, but insofar as Misa is a qualification for Malchus, or at least the potential for Misa is a qualification for Malchus, these things are going to be necessary here as well. In other words, let's say he reached that stage of physical maturation. Is that a qualification in the Malchus itself? No. But what is a qualification in the Malchus? That this might eventually lead to a Chiyuv Misa. And once he has hit this stage of physical maturation, can this ultimately lead to a Chiyuv Misa? No, it can no longer do so. So I could have said that you need a bedika for Malchus, not because this is a stipulation within the Malchus itself, but rather because it's a stipulation in Misa, and if I can't have Misa, then I can't have Malchus. So ipso facto, if he reaches that stage of physical maturity, I can't have Malchus either. Is that clear? It's like a chain of necessity. We'll see nafkaminas of this question in a moment.
When you actually are going to put the person to death, you can check at that point. Meaning, it's never going to come to an event where the...
In other words, the second argument would be as follows. Like the Orsameas argument last week, it would be the following. You can't give him Malchus if there is no way that this will ultimately lead to capital punishment. And if he's reached that stage of physical maturity, there is no way that it can reach that stage, right? So you just follow the, is this transitive? What would you call this, Jerry? Right?
Yeah.
Right?
Basically.
So it's transitive.
Yeah.
If A yields B and B yields C, then A yields C, right? So once, again, once he can't reach the physical maturity, then he can't have Misa. And once he can't have Misa, then he can't have Malchus. Okay? So those are two different ways you could have made the claim that you should need Bedika and Malchus. And again, it's subtle, but I think it's important because we're going to see an afkamina of the two. Now, Rav Chaim kind of walks back. Initially, Rav Chaim seems like he's saying both. If you're saying that you don't need Bedika at all, and you've given Malchus, even once he's reached that stage of physical maturity, right? Then you're saying that, number one, that physical maturation is not a qualification of the Malchus at all, A. And B, you're saying that even though this will never lead to a Chiyuv Misa, he can still receive Malchus. You're stipulating both. Rav Chaim walks back from that second assertion in the second paragraph that I provided here. He says, Rav Chaim concedes that once you're lacking any of these qualifications for Misa, you're automatically not going to have Malchus as well. In other words, Rav Chaim here is saying, like the Or Sameach, that if there's no potential for Misa, there isn't going to be Malchus either. Umishum, to kol halav harei ne'amar shelo yehei ben sora umora haroi lamavas uli hisakel. Because the lav here, the whole lav of lo sokul al adam, is that one should not eat in a way that will lead to the chi of Misa of ben sora umora. Rav Chaim is taking this middle approach. He's saying that, look, eligibility for Misa is a qualification for Malchus. Okay? But these stipulations are not necessary for Malchus in and of itself. In other words, once again, there could have been three possibilities. Option number one is that all these stipulations regarding physical maturity only pertain to Misa and not to Malchus. Extreme number one. Extreme number two is that all these qualifications regarding physical maturity apply to both Misa and Malchus. Option number two. The middle option number three is that they only apply to Misa, but because Misa itself is a qualification for Malchus, Mimela, it impacts the Malchus as well. That's the approach that Rav Chaim is adopting. He's saying, he's saying that these stipulations aren't for the Malkus itself. They have an impact on the Malkus because Misa itself is a stipulation that's necessary for Malkus. But it's not a direct qualification in the Malkus. And again, it's ipso facto. You're only going to have Malkus if you violated this Isur of Losoklu al Adam. This is source 5, second paragraph, third line. And this is only going to apply to a ben soru umorah who can potentially have a chi of misa. So why is there still no bedika? Nonetheless, we're specifically going to check him for the physical maturity during the Chi of Misa. Why are we going to check for it? Because it's a stipulation within the Chi of Misa itself. Because it's a direct stipulation pertaining to the Chi of Misa, therefore we need to check. Because once he's an Ish, once he's achieved full physical maturity, he's no longer a Ben Zoru Mora who can have a Chi of Misa. Eino Niskal, as the Rambam said. Masha Ein Kein B'Malkus, which is not true of Malkus, when it comes to Malkus itself, there's no stipulation whatsoever regarding his stage of physical maturity. Therefore, it's not going to consider Ishtani Dino if he reached that stage of physical maturity. Chaim is a very big chiddush here. What Chaim is saying outside, in short, is the following. He's saying that, look, I agree that once he reaches that physical maturity, he can no longer be made a ben soru mora. He can't have a chi of misa. And because he can't have a chi of misa, he can't have a chi of malchus either. Now, if that's the case, you should have to check him for the physical maturity, because if he is indeed physically mature, then he can't have skila, and ipso facto, he can't have malchus either. Chaim is suggesting what is a major chiddush here. You could have easily argued on this. Chaim is saying that because I hold that this physical maturation is not a condition within the malchus itself, but is rather an external condition impacting the misa, which ipso facto impacts the Malkus indirectly. Therefore, even though he reaches this physical maturity, and even though we really shouldn't be allowed to give him Malkus, we won't say Ishtani Dino simply because it's not a condition, a factor pertaining to this stage itself, and because it only impacts in an indirect way. That's a major chiddush of Rav Chaim. Now, I think a simpler way to go with Rav Chaim's chiddush is if you adopt the approach of the Minchas Chinuch that we saw last week, that even though he can never receive a chi of Misa, he can still receive Malkus, then you can make the stronger claim. In other words, we can claim that all the stipulations of Misa have no impact whatsoever on Malkus. And it's true that once he reaches a stage of physical maturity, he'll never be able to receive a chi of Misa. Nonetheless, that has no impact on Malkus whatsoever. It has no impact directly or indirectly on the chi of Malkus. And there will be a chi of Malkus despite the fact, a regular chi of Malkus, despite the fact that he can never be led to a chi of Misa. Okay? Is that more or less clear in terms of, again, I know the Rav Chaim piece is subtle, but that's Rav Chaim's chiddush. And again, later he himself kind of sets certain conditions on this chiddush and tries to temper it a little bit. But that is the basic analysis of Rav Chaim on the Rambam. Yeah.
I'm not sure that Rav Chaim could be saying this, but let's say that maybe he could be, that because the only reason that you need to check is in order to make sure that later on you can also give capital punishment.
Right.
So you don't have to check. It is true that this person needs to be eventually eligible for capital punishment, but you're not required to check because that's not really what we're doing here. And as of now, this person in theory could be eligible for capital punishment because you don't know.
I hear what you're saying, and I thought of that also, but I don't think that's what Rav Chaim is saying. I think Rav Chaim is saying something much stronger. What Jerry's saying is, look, it is true that if we were to conduct an examination and we did discover that he reached that stage of physical maturation, we wouldn't give him Malkus. But because that's not the operative question here, we're not going to go out of our way to conduct that bedika. Based on his busy, we have lots of things to do. We're going to assume that he's omed al cheskaso, that he stays in the stature that he had before, and we're not going to go out of our way to conduct this examination because this is only tangentially relevant to our case.
I thought of that also, but...
Is that not what you were saying?
He was very close. I was just going to say, you don't even need to say chazak. I think you could just say, this person is considered eligible for Misa eventually, because you don't know otherwise. So it's not like not...
That is a form of... I mean, I don't want to get into chazakos now,
It's not as if I have to assume that... I have to know that he won...
Okay. Again, well, yeah. However we omed al cheskaso here, again. Yeah. But basically, I think we're saying the same thing. Yeah. Now, I don't think Rav Chaim is saying that, because what Rav Chaim says is there's no din of ishtani dino.
Yeah.
Lo shayach ledin ishtani dino lihi pater bezeh. Rav Chaim seems to be saying that even if we knew definitively that he had reached that stage of physical maturation, and again, even though technically speaking, he should not be allowed to receive the chi of Malkos, once the this is a chiddush about ishtani dino, we might do a shir on ishtani dino. Because it is a sugya that does come up at the beginning of Mitzvah Mora, there's a Gemara in Daf Ayin Aleph Amud Beis about different ramifications of Ishtani Dino. And actually, I recommend going further in this piece of Rav Chaim. In the end, he has another important chiddush about Ishtani Dino, which he uses to explain the Rambam as well. But it seems like Rav Chaim is saying this is a chiddush in Ishtani Dino, that even if we knew definitively that he had reached physical maturity, even though we really, technically speaking, shouldn't be allowed to give him Malkus, he's not going to be able to escape this psak of based in on the basis of reaching that stage of physical maturity. That is, again, multiple chidushim in the Rav Chaim, but on a basic level, he goes back to our analysis of Malkus and Misa by asserting that Malkus is entirely different. Now, I think I want to conduct a full analysis of Avimo, but let me just... So we'll continue with Section 2 and Section 3 next week. It's also not so bad, because it also relates directly to a lot of the topics that I wanted to talk about next week. But I'm just going to point out one nafka mina, just because we had those nuanced middle categories, right? Between those two categories that I was saying. So again, if we say that Malkus and Misa are entirely separate, right? Then that's an easy category to understand, right? So we said that even though he's reached that physical maturation, he can receive Malkus. He just won't receive Misa. What would be a potential nafka mina between the latter two categories I was saying? One where the stipulations are necessary for the Malkus itself, or saying that the stipulations are necessary for the Misa, but ipso facto they impact the Malkus. So I think one interesting nafka mina would be different cases pertaining to the parents. Let's take the following case, right? We saw that there were lots of qualifications that were necessary for the parents themselves. They need to be, if they are Summa, Gideim, Chiger, any of these things that the Mishnah mentioned, then he can't be rendered a Ben Sorer Umura. Now let's say, again, Rahman al-Atslan, one of the parents is blind. So if that's the case, then can he receive Malkus? So if you take option number one, Malkus is a totally separate category, then you'd say, yeah, Malkus is a totally separate category. If you adopt options two or three, right, that either all these stipulations are stipulations in Malkus as well, or they're indirect stipulations because Misa is a necessary qualification for Malkus, then you'd say he can't receive Malkus. Fine. What about the following case, however? The question that we related to before, about the parents bringing him in. Do the parents need to bring him in for Malkus? Now here's a unique case for the following reason. If it's a stipulation in the Malkus itself, then if the parents don't bring him in, will he receive Malkus? No, he won't, right? But if we adopt our more nuanced approach, what I'm calling the middle approach, right, that it's only a requirement in Misa, and as long as there's potential for Misa, he can receive Malkus. Let's say the parents don't bring him in. Is it still possible that they will bring him in for the Misa stage? Of course it's possible. Of course it's still conceivable. So there you could say, even though the parents didn't bring him in, he will still receive Malkus. In other words, so far in all the cases we're dealing with, the problem is a problem that will persist for the Misa stage as well. If, again, Rahman al-Tzan, the father, is blind for the Malkus, he's still going to be blind for the Misa, or at least that's our default assumption. If he has reached physical maturation for the Malkus stage, he's going to have reached physical maturation for the Misa stage as well. Let's say we construct a case where he's lacking one of the qualifications at the Malkus stage, but he will potentially reach that qualification at the Misa stage. Again, the parents, they decide that they don't want to go forward with it at the Malkus stage. But it's still quite conceivable that they will decide to go forward with it at the Misa stage. So there, if we say that all of these qualifications are qualifications in the Malkus itself, then if the parents didn't bring him in, is he going to receive Malkus? Of course not. It's a qualification in the Malchus itself. If we're saying that, no, it's just a qualification for the Misa, but there needs to be potential for Misa in order for there to be Malchus, in such a circumstance, even though you're lacking this particular qualification, there is still potential for Misa, and because there is still potential for Misa, there will still be Malchus. So these two nuanced categories aren't just conceptual categories. You could have actually concrete nafkamina as a result when it comes to the discussion of Avivimo. And in terms of the details of Avivimo, like I said, Be'ez Hashem will discuss that next week. We'll discuss the Chaf Gimel Zakenim issue of the Minchas Chinuch. I also want to discuss some Hasra issues next week. So all of that will Be'ez Hashem continue with next Thursday.